Our next speaker is Pauline Blight-Johnston, Managing Director of RGA Reinsurance Company of Australia. During her nearly 20 years in the insurance industry, Pauline has held a variety of roles, including consulting actuary with Tillinghast, investment banker with Morgan Stanley, appointed actuary, and CFO of Asteron Life. An active industry participant, Pauline has served on a number of IAA committees, including Life Insurance and Wealth Management Practice Committee, Board of Examiners, and the Council of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia. She is currently on the board of the Financial Services Council and co-chairs the Life Board Committee of the FSE. Please welcome Pauline Blight-Johnston.
Thanks, Martin. We've just heard about some of the global challenges and some very big picture challenges from John Moroney, who talked to us about the global context and the advent of global SIFIs, and from Kurt with what was going on in the banking world and how serious that really was for all of us. What I'm going to do now is spend a few minutes a little bit closer to home for many of us and talking about some of the challenges that I see in insurance and wealth management, particularly in Australia, and what might be some of the opportunities for actuaries within that. I think we've been very fortunate as an industry and a country through the global financial crisis, but right now, actually, our industry is quite in the limelight. We've had a quite extreme beginning to the year, start of the year, and trust me, those of us who are in reinsurance thought, gosh, can January get any worse? And then February came along, and then March came along. It's been a tough first quarter. And combined with that, there's a whole lot of political heat on our industry, particularly with all the changes going on in superannuation in the context of a minority government trying to make decisions and things changing very quickly around that aspect, and the reputational issues for us with advice and how our products are sold. So there's actually quite a lot going on right now. And our industries, as I said, are firmly in the public eye. And to me, it seems that now is the time that actuaries need to step up and work beyond the mandate. I think we have a massive opportunity now to contribute a lot more broadly, potentially, than what we have before. We have to bring a unique skill set, and how we respond in this period now, I think, will dictate the relevance of our profession for many decades to come. Now, I've got some pictures to help me here today, and the first one is a bit dinky, I have to apologise, but here it comes. Super actuary. Now, this is not one of those G-up sessions about you too can be a super actuary. This, I just need to introduce to you, is a device that means an actuary who thinks beyond the mandate. So whenever you see this in a slide, think this is an opportunity for me to be contributing as long as I think broadly. So let's start by thinking about one of the key issues that I think is affecting our economy and our community, and certainly the marketplace in which we work, and that is longevity. This is something that we've been talking about, I think, for about 5 or 10 years pretty seriously. It's been on and off the agenda for a period of time. And the way I really think of it is there's two different players, key players, I think, in this, well, really three key players in sorting the longevity issue out. One is government, the second is insurers, and the third are retirees. Now, I think it would be there is always a role for government, but I think it would be a bad outcome and a failure of our industry, and particularly a failure of some of our minds, if this all ends up back at the government. So let's see how we can sort it out between the retirees and the insurers. Historically, it was really simple. All the longevity risk was borne by the insurers. That was a really great model. We took on all the longevity risk. We usually mismatched it. We backed longevity risk with equities. We made bucket loads of money until the years that the investment market stopped racing ahead. And all of a sudden, we realised maybe that's not such a great idea. It looked like we were making magic money for a period of time. But I think it was probably about the mid-90s when Australia, being one of the most forward-thinking countries at the time, brought in some true risk-based capital standards, and everyone realised this is not free money. This is not magic money. This maybe doesn't make so much sense. As a result, the pendulum firmly swung back to the retirees. Now, what does that mean? That means that most of the retirees out there are managing their own investment risk and they're managing their own longevity risk. I think as an industry, we have a tendency to think, oh, isn't that good? We got rid of that risk. We didn't get rid of it. We didn't do anything to fix it. We just gave it back to the people least equipped to deal with it. No, I don't think that's a success, to be honest. And I think that it provides a massive opportunity for an actuary to think beyond the mandate and think, how can we come up with some better solution? Clearly what we had back in the 80s wasn't ideal. What we have now isn't ideal. It is a massive problem. It is a growing problem. What can we do to try to create some sort of middle ground? And I think the trick here, and the reason it's a beyond the mandate thought, is because this is not just product design. I've been there and done that with product design, as a number of you have in this room. Product design is not just the answer. It is a bigger picture question. It's a bigger picture solution. And it requires us getting government and Canberra interested and excited. I know some people might think the longevity issue is hard to get people excited about because it is something off in the future. But look at what the Green Lobby's done. Right? Now, their issues, I think, are further in the distance than some of our issues, and they've got it firmly on the agenda. So I look forward to the Longevity Party at the next election. The next challenge that I think as an industry we need to have a good look at is group insurance. Now, I'm sure I'm not the only person mentioning this in this convention, and certainly if APRA's speaking, they will be, I know. This is my truck. I have a 2-year-old son, and up until a month ago, I didn't know I could draw a truck. Now I know I can draw a truck. This truck is a $3.3 billion industry. $3.3 billion of premium coming into this industry every year, group insurance, growing at in excess of 20% per annum. That is huge. It's fantastic. It's great. We're accessing more Australians. We're providing a valuable service and meeting the needs of more Australians. Excellent. But there's a pothole potentially in the road. What we're seeing is this is an intoxicating amount of money for many providers, and it's a very difficult and lumpy business to manage. As a result of that, when it comes time for renewal, it's very tricky to hold to your price when you know you're going to lose a large amount of money. Potentially, if somebody's offering a lower price, the impact on fixed expenses, all those things we need to think about. Combined with that, we're seeing benefit changes in benefit design. Some of those for the good, many of them for the good. So we're seeing long-term group salary continuance benefits. Fantastic benefit. Difficult to price. We're seeing changes in administration. And we're seeing changes in entry conditions. And what I'm seeing here is that it's an exciting industry, it's a growth industry, and we're trying to find ways to better meet the consumer needs. And in every individual tender, somebody says, wouldn't it be a great idea if we just change this? Yep, that's fine, let's change that. But I think what we can lose sight of is how all the different things, different components of this product sit together to provide good risk management. And it's very easy to tweak one or two things, and before you know it, you've actually forgotten why you put them there in the first place. Many of the things that we put in place in group insurance aren't needed every day, they're not needed every year. But I know recently I've been dealing with one scheme that's turned particularly nasty, and this happens from time to time. And have I been grateful for all the things that clever actuaries and product designers put in the product to enable us to manage it sensibly? That's not to avoid risk necessarily for the sake of avoiding risk, but to ensure that we can provide an insurance service. And insurance means the event has to be insurable. And I do think we've got to be very careful, things like entry conditions particularly, where people can choose when to enter and leave a superannuation fund and we can no longer control anti-selection. I think we need to be very alert, and another job for super actuary, to think about how all these things come together, not just to stick our head in the pricing and think we've done our job, but to think about how it all fits together to enable us to provide a valuable consumer benefit. Next one, the commissions and fees debate. This is taking a very large amount of many people's time in our industry. I can tell you at the Financial Services Council, it's pretty much number one item on the agenda at every meeting I've been at for the last 18 months. And it has potential to make a huge change for us. Typically, what we're seeing at the moment is commission has a very bad name. Commission is great in that it does drive sales. And the real negative and drawback of commission is, as we know, it can, in very rare occasions, cause conflicts of interest. So what's happened? In the investment arena, we've moved completely banned commissions and we're moving to a fee-for-service model. Fantastic for conflicts of interest. Problem is the sales. Okay. Now what that means in an investment market is that the fee becomes much more explicit, but typically there's still a pot of money that you can take the fee from. So it won't be the end of the world. In the life insurance context, and certainly in the general insurance context, although this fortunately isn't butting up against that yet, but it will do soon, I would expect. There isn't typically a pot of money to take the fee from. So anything that's going to get in the way, require a fee up front, is going to take away again from our ability to meet consumers' needs. We know we have an underinsurance problem and we need to do something about not making that worse. I think the mistake that industry is making at this point in time around this debate is thinking it's fees or it's commission. It's either or it's all. What superannuation, or what we could do if we think beyond the mandate, is think, what does 21st century remuneration look like? And again, go back to first principles. What are we trying to achieve here? We're trying to distribute our product so that we can meet the needs of Australians. And we're trying to do it in a way that we actually meet their needs, not somebody else and some intermediary's needs. I think there's a myriad of solutions to this one, and I think a couple of actuaries taking some leadership positions can really make a big difference in this debate and think about how do we design. We need to fairly reward those who do sell our product, who give advice, and advice is a very, very valuable commodity to be selling. So how do we reward appropriate structures to reward those who do sell our products and who do provide advice out in the community? The next big one that I think is looming is capital and financing. Now, this is not going to be a lecture on new capital standards, you'll be very pleased to hear, and it's certainly not going to be a lecture on IFRS. But what is concerning me when I look at the two is both the life and the general insurers in Australia are looking at new capital requirements, and you know, on the balance of probabilities, my guess is they're going to go up, not down. Certainly, the quantitative impact studies that we've done show that, although I know that that is being reconsidered by APRA at the moment, it's just a little bit hard to picture them going down. So assuming capital requirements go up for our businesses, at the same time, we have IFRS coming along. Now, IFRS is a profit reporting mechanism. It doesn't impact the economic value of our businesses at all, theoretically, but it does impact the way we report profits. The latest drafts of the IFRS guidance will have a negative impact on profits for our industry. So now we're getting this twin whammy where we're getting our reported profits falling and our required capital increasing. The economic impact may not be that huge, but it's going to look pretty bad. Typically in the market in Australia, we've got quite a unique environment here in that pretty much all of our insurers are owned by big banks. The big banks, although we think we're a big part of their world, they have a lot of other things on their mind, as we've just heard from Kurt, and they don't really want to spend more than about 10 or 15 minutes describing what's going on in the insurance industry when they're talking to analysts. So what's that going to do to the investment case for investing in an insurance company? What's that going to do to the price of an insurance company? We know that our industry is not well understood out there, and I think anything like this where it becomes opaque, it looks bad, is really going to hurt, as I said, the share price, the value of our industry, and make the case for investing in our businesses quite tough. Now, that's a high-level thought. And I think that's where I want super actuaries, or actuaries thinking beyond the mandate, to be spending their time. And it's interesting, as the capital standards have been evolving, I've had a number of opportunities to, on the behalf of the Financial Services Council, to discuss with APRA where they're developing. And what has disappointed me is the role that actuaries have been playing in that has been largely on technical issues. Now, sure, technical things, they impact things, sure, and there are some technical things in there that we'll all disagree on. But the big picture here is what's going to happen to investment in our industry and to our ability to continue to meet the needs of Australians. And I think we've got to rise right up to that level and think big picture, how do we make this whole thing hang together? And I've thrown in there Basel III as well. Many of our insurers being owned by banks, that also has an impact on how it all interplays. And then lastly, I have a grab bag of product design type issues, primarily from the life insurance space, but also covering some general insurance. First of all, is what I call trauma bingo. We have, a real issue emerging in our trauma insurance out there, and that is that many of the definitions are such that if I go to the doctor next week and he says, I'll take a blood test. Oh, I think you might have had a heart attack a few months ago. You didn't notice? No, I didn't notice. Oh, well, there you go, $2 million. Thanks very much. We have to be very careful of that sort of thing and of improving diagnosis improving, as I said, methods for diagnosis. I think we need to remind ourselves what it is we're trying to provide by this product. It comes back to the key theme with all of these are actually creating an insurable product, meeting a real need, not just flogging product, and also remembering changing community attitudes. Lifestyle. Lifestyle is a huge issue for us as an industry. One, we are starting... It's interesting, actually, in the latest KPMG mortality results, we've seen a flattening of mortality. We haven't seen an improvement of mortality for the first time in quite some time. Whether that is random variation or whether that's our lifestyles catching up with us, I guess we're yet to see. But there are some real lifestyle risks, and we will see pockets of our community claiming more than they have in the past, which is not something we're particularly used to. Discrimination. Who could believe the European Court of Justice decision? Unbelievable. Who would have thought one day that something like that would just come out of the blue? For those who aren't aware, Europeans are now no longer allowed to rate on the basis of sex. So, as it's been put, there are three sexes in the world now. There's male, female and European. But that's such a shock for our industry. But I think we need to be aware of the lesson in that, not just say, well, it doesn't apply to us right now, or it's just about males and females or whatever. There's a bigger picture going on here, and that is changing community attitudes about discrimination. Once we start with that, we can't assume this will stop. We can't assume it will stop at sex. We can't assume it will stop in Europe. We need to understand that people are becoming less tolerant or have a higher expectation about what fair means. And we need to understand what fair means. And we need to understand how we can continue to operate and be relevant and provide valuable services in that environment. So I think we need to start thinking about that. Floods. Classic example of where the general insurance industry has again been subject to changes in community and consumer expectations. I remember many years ago, I think it was expected that the insurance company wouldn't cover you if you're subject to a flood. Well, now there's an absolute expectation the insurance company will cover you, and we need to rise to that challenge, which I know we're in the process of doing. And stress. I put stress there because, again, this is one where I see changing community attitudes having a big impact on our business. Certainly in my world across disability income and TPD business, TPD policies, but also in the general insurance world across workers' compensation. It's interesting. Community attitudes towards stress and other mental illnesses are such that I'm not saying it's a great thing that we're prepared to talk about it more, we're prepared to acknowledge it more. We don't require people to hide these issues. What it does mean, though, is that there are increasing claims coming through for these types of conditions. And importantly, they're very subjective and very hard to assess. So we end up, one particular scheme I'm looking at the moment, there's a large number of stress claims coming through. And it takes my mind to say, well, does the insurable event then become deciding to claim as opposed to an event happening to you? If it's an inherently stressful occupation, then pretty much anyone can point to a stressful event having happened. So in that case, how do we respond with a valuable product? Now, it's easy. I had somebody say to me, well, we could exclude stress and we could cover them. Well, yes, we could, but that's not the right answer. That's the easy answer. The right answer is how do we continue to provide those type of benefits for people who genuinely need that support in an environment where community attitudes are changing and we need to keep pace with community attitudes. And there we go. Opportunities everywhere for Super Actuary. So how can we make a difference? This isn't intended to sound like a lecture, but I do worry that the actuarial profession is becoming increasingly marginalised in some of these debates. These are material debates that are happening sometimes on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald or the Financial Review that affect our industry that I don't think the profession is necessarily as active in as it could be. I think we all have the skills, the understanding, the insight and the intellect to be key contributors to the debates. I think we need to continue to attract and foster talent into the profession, and people that are prepared to use that intellect and understanding of financial risks and outcomes as a springboard to solving the real world problems rather than as an end in itself. And we need to remember not to get so bogged down by the infinitely exciting technical detail that we miss the big picture sometimes. Because I really do believe that we have a valuable role to play in the economy, and the community, government, industry and the economy will benefit by actuaries who do venture beyond the mandate. So with that, I'll hand over to Martin for questions.
Thank you very much, Pauline.